Goes on.
Yes, indeed. Here we are back again. Another episode of Single, Obsolete, and Dangerous, a podcast where black folk and white people can come together to have a constructive conversation about racism, white supremacy, and white people, but have it in a constructive manner. And here I am with Ababa, for real, a teacher and someone that I've had a lot of interaction with and learned a lot from over the years, Brother Justin Lane.
Hey.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
I just want to thank you for coming. And we've been talking about an hour and a half. We've been talking about an hour and a half, but we're going to try to get some things in here. And we're going to start right off with the first question, and then we're just going to kind of flown up, right?
Okay, sure.
Okay, so first question, are you white or are you non-white?
Non-white.
You're non-white. And in the system of whites, does the system of white supremacy, which is racism, is it in existence?
It is.
Okay. And so what have been some of the things that you've learned to navigate through this system of white supremacy not being classified as white? What are some of the things that you've learned that have helped you, brought you this far? You're an educator, you are a family man, a father, a business owner. What are some of the things within this system of white supremacy that you have learned to help you navigate to this point?
Yeah, I was just thinking about this actually, not in exactly these terms, but you know, so I think one of them has actually been to avoid, unless extremely necessary, physical conflict.
Hmm. Physical conflict.
Yeah.
That is what helps you.
It's been one of the things.
Wow.
Because I think one of the things that white supremacy does is traps you into conflicts, particularly with black men, that can get you killed, can get you to do something that's very dangerous to other people. So I think like a natural, I was somebody who was like, I was okay with that aversion. Like, I've had situations where I'm like, I'm going to create the physical conflict here because I feel like it's going to actually protect other black people, black men that I thought, you know, I wanted, that was important to me. But there have been other times, so this is just what I was going to offer. That's what I thought about today.
Wow.
Yeah. So we can continue. But that's one.
Yeah. Mm.
And I've actually had that same value that I've tried to pass on to my sons. Like, to be very, very careful about that, because I think that is something that it's a very, you know, I'm going to take this to where I think
no, please.
A core aspect of white.
You know what? I don't even want to cut you up. I am like just spewing over here, just really liking what you said. Please continue, man. That is so deep to me.
So
that is so deep. That is like, wow. I think I'm going to do a whole segment of me just talking like. You avoid part of the things that you learn to navigate through the system of white supremacy is staying away from physical confrontation and all the trappings that it does try to. Please continue.
Yeah.
That is powerful.
Oh, I'm yeah.
That is, and it's not no, and it's not no nonviolent thing either.
Right, right, right.
But
no.
It's, please, please, please.
But I think that the, I think it comes easier to me, a cancer, a water sign, a lot of it. So it's not like I have to like, you know, hold back some fire-breathing dragon. But I was thinking about this today as something that then, something I also would talk to my sons with about, you know. And I think that, but I do think actually has another line that it goes to, which I do think is connected to what we're calling white supremacy. Although I do want to say, I think white supremacy is redundant. So
okay.
To me, whiteness already has the term supremacy in it.
Mm.
Race means right. Race means whiteness.
That's right.
And whiteness means white supremacy. There is no such, the white supremacy would make us think that there's a white non-supremacy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So white is supremacy once you have the con, once you, so we should know when we say white, the history of the word means the group that is superior to everybody else.
Man.
So that's one thing.
That's what's the first question I asked.
Okay, yeah. So the other part, I guess I would say, though, I think that's connected, though, to this, that I'm still interested in trying to explore more, which is what I just said right there is a real violation of masculinity, particularly the way black masculinity is constructed, the way we construct it, the way it is. That's a violation of that rule, right? Because masculinity, the way we construct it, it's supposed to be like, I'll fight you, so to say that, it's like be a sucker or a wimp, whatever.
Mm.
But I think that a piece of it, though, that's related again to surviving in the system, to, for me, is a willingness, and this does, I think, also show up in Capoeira, but a willingness to bend.
Another thing about the in the SOD podcast, there are words that are going to be used.
Yes.
So you have to define certain words.
Please, thank you.
Whatever word you use, you don't have to explain why you use it,
yes,
but just please define. So you said the word Capoeira.
Yes.
Capoeira. I don't understand what that word means.
Sure.
Can you explain to me what
absolutely. Capoeira is an Afro-Brazilian martial art that comes from the Congo region of Africa, developed by Congolese Brazilians and Afro-Brazilians in Brazil, in Bahia, mm-hmm, which is on the coast of Africa,
right,
west of Brazil. Martial art has a lot of, was hidden through dance, is one of the stories of its origin. I was able to study with Mestre Nego Gatsu for a little more than a decade, and that's what I mean when I say Capoeira.
Okay.
And so I think it's also has a Capoeira idea to bend, to dance, to move, mm-hmm, necessarily to always confront confrontation, like fist to fist. And so what I was thinking about this, though, about masculinity and this relationship to Europeanness, and
when you say Europeanness, okay, are you talking about white supremacy or whiteness?
Well,
is Europeanness something that's not whiteness?
So let me say something about this.
Okay.
So let's try to think that question through.
Okay.
As I understand recently from Cedric Robinson and this book he's written called Black Marxism, which I really recommend.
Black Marxism?
Yes, Black
by
Marxism.
By Cedric Robinson?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Recommend that.
That's one thing. There's a lot of books always thrown.
Yep.
Black Marxism.
Yep.
Okay, got it.
So Cedric Robinson makes the point that Europe is constructed like around the 1000s, 900s, 800s maybe. Charlemagne, maybe 800s.
True.
And before that, really what people think of are barbarians outside of Greece. They're in the wild.
The Visigoths, the Vandals.
Yeah, all
right.
These people. They're not Germanic tribes, right? They're not. They're not a group.
No, they're not.
They're not a group, right?
Right.
So I think that Europe is a construction of white supremacy, or at least it is the beginning of the construction of white supremacy, because it's the idea of trying to consolidate European people as though they were a group. That in many ways, maybe, and this is a question I have to the listeners, is Europe constructed later? Like, do 1300 people go back and refer to Europe when you might have still had scattered tribes?
You know what they do? You know what they do in the system of white supremacy?
Mm.
Because part of their reclamation of their supposed history is that they've grafted themselves to certain ethnic groups and civilizations that they were not a part of.
Mm.
So a lot of people, especially white people, believe that they are actually descendants of the Romans and descendants of the Greeks.
Right.
And that they are the proper inheritors,
yes,
of those information and understandings, when you know very good and well that it was the Arabs who kept the Greek writings,
mm-hmm,
and correct the Roman writings. Ancient Arabs from the Middle East and El Hombre and things of that nature, and from Spain and the Black Moors,
yeah,
they were the ones that kept those poetries and those writings of the Greeks. Those Visigoths, those Goths,
sure,
those Vandals,
right,
those Germanic, those Celts.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? From,
yeah,
Germania, those islands,
yeah,
early islands. They weren't even writing, let alone using a toilet.
Right, yeah.
Or let alone had shoes.
Right.
So I think what has happened because of white supremacy, they have associated that big block of time,
right,
that you're talking about,
yeah,
that somehow, some way, it went Greek, Rome, Europe.
Right.
Not knowing that there was a big thing in between the time, their dark ages and things of that nature. They had to have a renaissance.
Right.
They had to be brought out of their savagery. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, so I think the question I guess we were asking, this goes back to the piece about masculinity.
True.
And another thing you were saying, just and we have Africa, of course, before Greece. So we don't just have, a gap between Greece and whatever, we have Africa before Greece. But I do think the idea of European or even Greek masculinity,
mm-hmm,
needs a lot more examination. And I want to do that examination.
Indeed.
I still have more to learn about that. But I do think it has something to do when we say fragile masculinity.
And toxic masculinity.
Right. And we think about...
Exactly. Go ahead, continue.
The last part about that, I think, is that's related to this thing about survival in white supremacy, which is, to the extent I think that we absorb the ideas of masculinity from European men
to survive,
which is, and it itself is a false construction. There's another book I would recommend, When God Was a Woman by Merlin Stone.
Mm.
And her point is the replacement of women, removing women from divinity is something that the Greeks do for reasons of land and who, you know, the patriarch related to a bunch of other things. So I think one of the things about, I would say, about survival in white, so-called white supremacy, I do think has, for me, something to do about having a masculinity that I think I was, it was, my father had another similar, I think, version of not being quite as, like, you know, iron fist. It's like I said, I don't have to do much. It's not like I have to really resist some. I'm not some 6'5" guy with a, you know, easy as though I would be able to run through the world anyway. So it's easy to for my who I am to go with this. But I do think it's helped me to survive. And I do think having my father, who also I think had a different kind of masculinity that wasn't based upon like physical violence, I do think that is one of the ways to survive.
It's deep. I think that from my personal aspect, some of the greatest things and lessons that I had learned that I'm so grateful for having was training in martial arts. Mm. And in not just, not the we, it, and it's different. Even now that I'm looking at it now, and I teach now, and I teach at the university, and I teach martial arts at the university, but my experience was not the Saturday mornings, Tuesday nights. It was something that was in the house. It was part of conversation, but it wasn't that we talked about martial arts, but it was a martial way of things. Mm. And that aspect of the martial way did help me understand a lot of things as it related to physical confrontation. Mm. And it was so hard to teach these things as a kid growing up. And my father teaching me these things is even that much more now that I am a father. And like, okay, I understand that now. One of the big things that he would say was, if you go out there and you do anything that I have shown you, right, you're going to have a problem with me. Mm. So I knew that at a very young age, I could physically, I didn't know, but I could physically fight very, very well. Mm. And because I was, and the type of training, the training that I was constantly having wasn't Sega Genesis on the weekends and kicking it with my friends. They weren't getting that.
Right.
So I was afraid to do anything physical because I know as soon as I would do it, and there was a couple times I did, it would get back to my father. Man, he did this one little thing where he turned around and kicked it.
Right.
And then my dad is sitting there listening and he would just look at me and I'm like, damn. Or I would be at school or something happened and man, I don't know what happened, man. He grabbed my finger and twisted up and flipped.
Right.
Next thing you know, and then I could just hear, and I hear my father saying, oh, okay. And it just like, it just made me like.
What would your father, how did your father respond to you when you heard?
Wow. Now you really want to. My father, it was a martial way of discipline. So I never got hit without being able to protect myself. Mm. Now my ability to protect myself is solely upon me.
Right.
So my father would never hit me or discipline me without me having a chance to protect myself.
Right.
So there was many a times in our interactions where I couldn't protect myself as strong as I could. So it would force me to even train even harder and get even better. So even when I did get to the point to where we would have to go at it with each other, I could protect myself, then he stopped hitting. Like, there's no more confrontation now.
Okay.
So it's like, I'm like, dude,
you could strike back.
It's not even strike back. Okay. It was just defend myself.
Okay.
So I couldn't even strike back, let alone I got to defend myself. So once I was even strong enough to defend myself, whatever he threw at me,
right.
And I was about maybe like 14 or 15 by the time I was able to defend anything that this ninja could throw at me.
Right.
And I'm not saying ninja to say nigga. I'm saying a real ninja.
No,
so
right, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so once I was able to really kind of do that, then it was, okay, now you're on punishment.
Okay.
So there was no more physical chastisement.
Right, right.
So the physical chastisement got to a point to where I'm not just sitting here, you know, put your arm, turn around, let me smack, you know, I never got that. It was protect yourself.
Right.
You know what you did.
Right.
Protect yourself. I will never hit you without you ever having the ability to protect yourself.
Right.
Now, whether you have the skill to protect yourself or not, that's on you.
Right.
But you must protect yourself.
Right.
And I tried. And for some years, it was hard.
Sure.
But by the time I was able to protect myself, no matter what he threw at me, no matter what weapon was grabbed at that time, you know, and it wasn't like empty handed. It was just like, here, you take the boken, which is a wooden sword. I take the boken.
Right.
Now, so it was training. training. It was definitely training. It was definitely lessons in it. It was definitely wasn't like, okay, I just got no. Right. It was just I wasn't.
Right.
It wasn't that, man, my dad beat me. It was damn, I couldn't stop this and he did this or you know what I mean. Tag, I left my back open.
Right.
So you know, we were for Brazilian. So you know, he Brazilian jiu-jitsu heavy.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And he would mix it up and then he would grab a weapon. And it was just. It was tough.
Okay.
It was definitely tough. Okay. Even sharing this is even tough because I don't really share. But no, I understand. But what it did was it forced me to be cognizant of my physical expression.
Right. Yeah. He's even that he's teasing me.
And I had to learn how to be able to navigate a physical situation because I was never worried about the kid on the street.
Right.
Even jumping, even a couple times where there was like two guys and I took out two guys. I was never afraid of that.
Yeah.
I was always worried about when word got back to my father that I had to rely on something that he actually taught me to do, that he told me not to do.
Right.
So I felt like, why did you teach me how to do this?
Right.
But then tell me not to use it.
Right.
But the conflict was for me to learn.
Right.
The conflict was, it was something that I had to learn how to figure out. And I'm so grateful for that.
Yeah.
Because it forced me to think and it forced me to be more cognizant. And it was like, I never get into jokes because I could see how ripping on somebody and making jokes or you know shooting shots at somebody can escalate to a physical confrontation.
Right.
So I don't make fun of people. I never get into cracking jokes on people.
Right.
I don't play fight.
Right.
I because I've seen how play fighting and someone really gets hurt really bad and then a real fight happens. So I just don't play fight.
Right.
So these were things, and I'm at 13, 14, 15.
Right.
Austin doesn't rip.
Right.
Austin don't play fight. I don't do any of those things.
Right.
And I hadn't realized that it had codified me to have a behavior that just still gives me on to this day. I've never seen my father get into a physical confrontation with a man, ever.
Right.
I did not notice that until I was in my 20s.
Right.
And all the physical training and martial training that we had done, I had never seen him use it.
Right.
I spoke to him about him using it in lessons, but I never physically saw him do it.
Right.
And it was something that, it was deep to me because he had said that. And I learned like, wow, he made it a point to never be physical or use any of those things in my presence or for me to watch it.
Right, right.
So is my dad really that badass? I was like, I don't know.
Right.
But I know this.
Right.
If there was ever a confrontation I was around or anything, I never, and there was another thing also as it relates to this, I never heard him talk about bad about white people or the white man.
Mm.
Like if there was ever an issue or problem, he never said, well, you know, the system is set up for black.
Right.
I never heard him talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
But he had, you know, books about Malcolm and
sure.
But he never said those phrases, it's the white man.
Mm.
It's the black, you know, it's the system. He never said that, ever. He that never came out of his mouth.
Yeah.
And I never seen him get into a physical confrontation with a man,
mm.
even though he was big and strong and burning.
Right.
You see him, you know, you see, like, so, and I know, and I've seen, like, how he, you know what I'm saying? It's like, wow.
Mm.
And so that was just something that was big to me. And when you were saying, staying at a conflict, a physical conflict, I see that.
Mm.
I see that even with myself. I think that is something that has helped me to learn how to navigate and not be physical.
Yeah.
Wow. Next question.
Yeah.
Do you have any white friends or white allies?
Well, I don't like the ally term, but I definitely have. No, I don't like the ally term, but I mean, I have. You know, I think more than white friends, I have white family.
You have white family.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that means what exactly?
So my mother is white.
Okay.
And then all my mother's family is white.
Okay.
Now, in terms of white friends.
So you would consider your mother's family your friends?
Well, no, they're my family. I would not consider them my friends, no. My mother I would consider my friend, but I would not consider...
Like uncle and grand and cousins?
Yeah, no.
No?
No.
Why?
Well, I just think that, I think like, you know...
If you could call on that uncle... Like, I really need
I could call my uncle. Absolutely, my uncle. I could call him as my uncle, and he would absolutely give me $500.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But I think of friends as something different. I think of friends as, like people who are just, like, regularly sharing the intimacies of their lives with each other and so on and so forth and rah, rah, rah.
Mm-hmm.
So I, in terms of what I think you're referencing, like peers or that kind of friendship or whatever.
It doesn't matter.
However,
mainly specifically, I'm asking as I was like, if you need something and you know that there's only a white person that could help you, there's that white person in your phone that you can call.
Oh yeah. For sure.
I just want to tell you how much I appreciate you having that.
Yeah.
And I think that is extremely imperative to have white people when you are a non-white person that you can rely on to help you.
Yeah.
Because the question I'm going to ask you, is there anything that you've accomplished in your life or have in your possession that was not given to you or allowed for you to have by a white person and or white people directly or indirectly?
Well, the indirectly part is hard. But let me say this. So I'm a part of the Lukumi community. Now, Lukumi means friendship in Yoruba. And it is a practice, traditional practice, that came to Cuba from West African people who are called Yoruba. I've heard some people say Yoruba is even like a Catholic term even. So, but still, that's how it's generally said, that Yoruba people came to Cuba and, right?
I heard the people of Benin, would it be the people from Benin?
I think that.
Specific?
Well, but I also think that there's actually a place called Lukumi in West Africa. If you look, there are maps I've seen that have Lukumi on the map itself.
I remember being in Africa and with a guide one time, and he had gave me the dialect that it was called, the practice was called Ndela, and it was the people of the Benin, but we were interpreting them as being Yoruba, and the Yoruba, he was saying, he was letting us know that you guys know them as Yoruba, or you're calling them Yoruba, and you're saying that their practices being Yoruba, but the real, and he gave the dialect was called Dendela. That's what was, and they were from the people of Benin.
Okay.
So, but
Dendela, you said?
Dendela.
Dendela. Okay.
Yeah, Dendela.
Yes, yeah. News to me. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a guide that we were with. We were in Senegal. He was taking it down.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but I don't say this as an initiated, like I'm not initiated. I'm not a priest. I'm just speaking about a practice of a person who's very, very a child that in the tradition. Nothing like that.
Right.
Nothing. No. There's no scholarship from me on the topic. But just to say, what I've learned to me does not come from white people. The little bit that I've had shared with me, that I've been able to understand, to me is not from white people. And I've seen you
directly,
talk about this.
Not directly, but
indirectly either.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I've seen you discuss this, right? And so I've thought about this.
Cool.
So I think that this is what African people, going all the way to Kemet, have been able to hold on to, from Nubia to Kemet, to traveling down to West Africa, have been able to hold on to, and that it is in spite of, and that white people weren't even in existence when these practices came. And I think it's important for us to say, white people begin around the 1500s, right? Wow. They have not been here for time immemorial. Mm. They emerge out of Anglo-Saxon people, European people. Again, things I have more to learn about. These are my opinions. I have more to learn, right? True. But I do want to again reference Cedric Robinson to our point about sourcing. I really do think he has a lot to say. I don't see any.
Is Cedric Robinson a white person or a non-white?
He's an African descent, non-white.
So you're having an African person talk about white people.
He's not talking. Yes, absolutely.
There's no white people that you have read that talked about white people.
Well, I have actually, because one of the piece that I learned a lot from. Again, we're going to do another book.
There we go. Okay. No, please. Right. This is what it's about.
So this is Cheikh Anta Diop.
Civilization and Barbarism.
No, that one has been over my head. I'm not going to get through that. But this is the Cultural Unity of Black Africa.
Right. Okay.
And he does a lot of good sourcing there of Greek authors, and he traces back what he says are the two cradles of civilization. Matrilineal and patrilineal.
Right.
And so his point there is to look at the Greeks and why they created patrilineal societies. Those, I read some of those books, and I read a little bit of Aristotle. Those would be white people that I read about white people.
But are those the Visigoths and Vandals?
No.
And the...
They're not.
The Anglo-Saxons?
No, they're not.
Okay, so then when we're talking about the Goths, the Visigoths, Germanics, Celtics...
I've not.
Why now? This is where it comes, and counter racist logic.
Yeah.
What I practice, what I don't do, I don't allow a white person give me a perspective about non-white people, particularly black folks.
Yeah.
But in the reverse, when a non-white person or particularly a black person talks about white people as well.
Yeah.
I'd rather listen to white people from white people.
I've seen you say that.
Yeah, and when it comes about African black, I'd rather, you know.
Yeah.
Now, what we can do is we can have some cross-referencing and comparison.
Yeah.
And so there are some perspectives that I like that give comparisons. So Sheikh Anta Diop, he gives a cultural comparison. So, yes. But if it would be someone like Malifa Ashanti, I wouldn't subscribe so much to Malifa Ashanti explaining to me about Eurocentricity.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's giving it from an Afrocentric perspective, and it's just as equal as I'm not going to let an Egyptologist tell me about ancient Kemet either. So, but there could be some comparison.
Sure.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because the one thing is, in counter-racist logic, they tell
you. Can you define that?
Counter-racist logic?
Yeah.
Okay. So counter-racist logic is the counter to the racist understanding that racist logic that is understanding. So in racist understanding of the practice is always going to be counter to what is expressed. So if a white person expresses, according to racism, no mixing of the races, right?
Yeah.
We don't mix with the races. We don't have kids with black folk, right?
Yeah.
Or anyone who's not white.
Yeah.
The counter would be what?
Have to kids. Do that.
To have kids, exactly.
Okay, yes.
But.
And when you use this term, where does the definition come from?
Counter-racist logic?
Yeah.
This is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is a term, you created this term.
I've created the, no, I didn't create the term, I'm creating the definition, I'm redefining it. There is, the term counter-racist logic was created, first introduced to me by Neely Fuller.
Yeah.
In his book, Counter-Racist Logic.
Okay.
So he has a definition of counter-racist logic, which is,
I was looking at you. That's why I say that, because you opened the book to me, and it was like, that's where you opened the book to. That's why I'm saying that.
Yeah, so there
you
is.
Show me the book, and then we open the book, and here it is.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so here we go. Right? You open the book, and that's where it was. That's why I said
it. Not right here.
Yeah.
We can
sure,
use it. Yeah, go ahead and read it. Check
okay.
it out.
Counter-racist logic, counter-racist science, in parenthetically, use these terms to apply to thought, speech, and or action that are designed to result in replacing the system of white supremacy, racism, with a system of justice, balance between people, which means guaranteeing that no person is mistreated and guaranteeing that the person who needs help the most gets the most help, prefer to use these terms instead of the terms black history, black studies.
Mm-hmm.
He says, then he has a series of notes here that
right.
you'll have to go and get the book.
You have to get the red. So, specifically, counter-racist logic is to help create justice,
okay,
right, and to counter any actions that are used within the system. So,
it's different than what we call anti-racism.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
It's very, matter of fact, I don't use the word anti-racism at all.
Okay.
I use counter-racist logic.
Okay.
Because the logic to counter racism is to create justice.
Okay.
Right? So, the example is the most natural and beautiful thing you can do with another human being is to create life.
Okay.
So when a racist person comes and says, we don't want the mixing of the races, you're denying something that you can human beings can do.
Yeah.
But there is an issue.
Yeah.
Because we know that sexual activity, which we're going to deal with later,
okay,
is actually a tool used.
Uh-huh.
Sexual exploitation, right?
Yeah.
So I understand producing a child. But I do also understand that there's a lot of sex happening where no children are being produced.
Yeah.
And in fact, there's a lot of sex happening with the explicit expression that no children be produced.
Sure.
But sex is to happen.
Yeah.
So the counter is, let's no frivolous sex then.
Okay.
So because the justice...
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Only have sex with white people if you're black to create children.
Or for a loving relationship.
Okay, okay.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. What I'm saying is, I'm not saying not to have sex with white people. I'm just saying not to have frivolous sex.
Frivolous, okay.
Right,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But would you recommend frivolous sex in general?
No, not at all.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I don't recommend frivolous sex with a non-white person and another non-white person.
Yeah.
In fact, I think the frivolous sex that we have among black folk kind of creates a lot of conditioned issues that we have right now.
Okay,
so, yeah.
Okay.
I don't want that to happen either.
Okay, okay.
But even that much more so, at least not with a white person.
Okay, okay.
Definitely. While racism is in existence specifically.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
So the question and the aspect is, so you're saying that this African practice is something that you have, that you've accomplished?
Received. You said, have I gotten anything?
Yeah, so this is something that you got, that you received that wasn't by any white person, right? The ability for you to receive that, was there ever a chance for a white person and or white people to inhibit your ability to receive that?
Was there ever a chance for that to happen? Oh, absolutely.
So then, because you have it,
Yeah.
Then the white person or white people indirectly allowed you to experience, correct?
No.
So then that means whenever there was a time that there was a chance for a white person to stop you from experiencing that, they couldn't stop it even if they wanted to.
Well, here's my thought about this. I think that the history of this, I still have, again, more to learn.
Okay.
But what my sense has been that the reason that you see, for example, in Cuba, the fusion of what people call Orisha, or, you know,
syncretizing. You're talking about syncretizing.
I'm going to say that
not syncretizing.
Well, not. I think synchronization is a term I'm not sure I would use, because synchronizing is like to get my clock on the same as this clock, right? Is how I understand synchronizing, which means to make these two things the same. And I think that I'm not sure, because I don't come from that culture where they really were the same. And what I was taught in Capoeira, in the discussion of this, was that the saints were used to mask the Orisha, right? So they would
say not sinking, but sink, but not S-I-N-K, but
S-Y-N-C.
Another,
yeah, but S-Y-N-C would be synchronization, like two clocks.
No, not that. It's another way that
Is there?
Synchronization is the masking. That's called syncretizing.
Is it?
Syncretizing, yeah. Not syncretizing, but syncretizing. It sounds phonetically the same. It's spelled completely
different.
Okay,
I don't know.
Yeah.
So all I have to say, what I understand, mm-hmm. again, more to learn, is that Europeans tried to stop this, right?
Mm.
They wanted to stop this. Mm. And I think it's important about what I think is a concern of mine, what I see from a very distance of Mr. Fuller's work, as I read your posts about these things. Right?
True.
Is that, and your work.
True. Oh, your work. My work? Your okay, work. Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, I can appreciate that.
Your work, because it's your work. Yeah, we've talked about it. This is your work.
Yeah.
So I think that it gives, I think one of the parts about European supremacy, which then has become, which we know as white supremacy,
man,
is for me to imagine white people as these superhuman people.
I feel
right?
what you're saying.
And for me to always imagine anything that they want, they can accomplish, right? And one of the things I've questioned, this goes back to Pitt, and it goes back to some of the discussion we were having about the exact people we were discussing at Pitt, which was there was a group of people, I think, back in the day, we had Black Action Society, right? And we would consider ourselves organizers, right?
Mm.
And then there were other people in the university setting, I think, who considered us probably foolish because the white man was going to do what they were going to do. And their perspective was like, you know, maybe smoke a little weed. I might smoke a little weed too, I'm just saying. Smoke a little weed, like, you know, rap about the deeper aspects of life, you know, diggable plans, be on a higher level, so to call, right? But I always kind of would look at that and say, here's my criticism, though, of what I observed from this group, is that this would be, to me, exactly what European supremacy would want you to do.
Oh.
Which for you to feel as though activity was useless,
uh-huh.
because the white man's going to do what the white man's going to do.
I see
right?
what you're saying.
And so I feel like it's one of those things where it's like there are times to me when it seems like people feel like, it's like when I try to tell, I'll say to my son, like with a certain like not caring about school, I'll say, this is your reaction to the way that they're teaching you is for you not to care about it. And you feel like you're rebelling. I want to tell you that you're following them.
Wow.
Right?
Right.
And so I have this same feeling about, I feel like when we feel like we've outsmarted white supremacy to the degree that we say, the white man wanted this, the white man wanted that, the white man wanted this, is to give European descended people this power they do not have, but they would like us to believe that they have.
The bare bones piece of what I expressed and what I had learned from Neely Fuller,
yeah,
from his suggestions,
yeah,
and what I suggest is when I do talk about white supremacy, and I talk about it in a fashion to where it does create kind of a like a no-win part of the conversation, right? So there are times where I interact because of the logic of the conversation to where I've already kind of I've kind of put them in a corner in these questions. You can see it.
Right?
So yeah, it's very chestful,
yes,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
But I do that, and I understand that I'm doing that, but I do that so that it forces you to not think, to think outside.
Sure.
Right? To think outside. So it is, I'm not asking these questions, because that question in itself, and anyone who's listening, why I ask these questions, every single question, believe it or not, is a chess piece question that follows based upon no matter what is even asked.
Sure.
That's why it took me a year and a half to even develop these questions.
Similar to this would be like when you talk to Marxists and they would say, we're going to call the contradiction.
Right.
And so Marxism will take you down a similar path,
right?
Eventually to show you the class contradiction is the fundamental contradiction, right?
And right,
and all things go back to that source.
Right.
Or if you're talking to, I used to have a friend of mine, a deep friend of mine, who tolerated me as a roommate when I was not a roommate because I was not neat, bad roommate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And would take me through a similar logic to the Christian
piece, right?
That big meta concepts will have a sequence that will take you if you follow the assumptions.
Follow the assumptions.
You got it. So that's why I want to stop that assumption right there, right?
Let's stop.
Because I know where we're going to walk down.
That's okay.
And I want to ask you though,
right?
Where? Because your first question you asked me was, this is why I asked you the same question about the Latin situation on Facebook, which maybe we'll go into. So you asked me. You said
first question.
Did you ever? Was it ever something that you received from a white person? I said yes. Is what it is. You said, is it possible that a white person could stop you from receiving it? In my mind, what I imagined was, I guess let's say I was going to go somewhere and I got arrested on the way.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But it's also possible, but anything is possible though.
But time out. Anything is possible in a vacuum. We are not in an environment and we're not in a context. And this is where I wanted to get to the bare bones, because anything that you do have or that you have accomplished has been within a contextual premise. The very first question I asked you was, is the system of white supremacy, which is racism, in existence?
Yeah.
And you emphatically said yes.
I did.
So then that means when I ask you later on, is there anything that you have or anything that you've accomplished within the context of white supremacy that has not been given to you by a white person and or white people directly or indirectly, you have already answered that question by saying that it exists. Now, if we want to, we retrace back and be like, all right, let's go back.
But
the thing is now is, because what I'm asking ultimately is to have a production of justice. How do you produce, or how do you counter, or how do you eliminate a system in which you find yourself not part of the superior position? So that's why the question is, are you white? That's why the very first question I ask you, are you white or non-white?
Yes, yes.
Because ultimately I'm asking you, are you part of the persons who are not? And you're like, no. So then are you in that system?
Yes.
You're like, yes. So then what ends up happening, do you have any white friends? Oh, yes, well, family members, then in those white friends. So then, is there anything that you have that white people haven't given to you? And you're like, well, you know, there is, might be something. But then if you really look at your allowance for you to have something because it could have been taken away, it's just as equal as them giving it to you. Either they taught a black person that taught you to it, or that they could have cut it down. Because right now, in the context of the reality of right now, whatever we do have is going to be indirectly by... Now, this is the thing. That's not bad. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, I hear that. But,
you see what I'm saying? There's nothing wrong. And this is, and I think this where it's not that I'm speaking from a defeatist attitude, because one of the most important thing is there's no emotions. So there's no feelings and there's no emotions to the reality of the situation.
But let me take this logic conclusion. I would say. So two thoughts about this. Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Is white supremacy the only system that is existing in the universe at the moment?
The system of white supremacy is the only system existing on Earth right now.
It's the only system. There's no other systems around.
There's nothing that is equal to it or above it.
But what I'm asking you, is there anything, your point is that there is nothing that exists outside of it.
No, brother.
Is there a place
on the planet?
Go ahead. So,
all right.
So your contention there is that there is nothing that's happening. Like, for example, the sun rising tomorrow. That happens on Earth.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Is that happening inside the system of white supremacy?
Absolutely.
So the system of, like, let's say, the idea that you're...
The system of white supremacy is reflective of human interaction. And there are many systems that are not based upon human interaction.
Yeah.
As it relates to human interaction, the effects of the system of white supremacy has spilled in many avenues that are not based upon human interaction. Perfect example is pollution. So pollution is directly connected to the existence of white supremacy, because the ability for a human being to mistreat another human being will have no problem mistreating the environment.
Well, here's what I want to say, thing where I actually see a point that you're making, right? Which is, let's go to, let's say, like the Black Panther Party.
True.
So to your point, where I can see your point, which would be that if the system of white supremacy needed it shut down, it would be hard to see how it could not eradicate. So to this point, I agree with you about that for sure. That if it that the but there is a piece about that that I think is
defeatist.
It's not that it's defeatist, but the thing that occurred to me was that if, according to the way you're mm-hmm. describing this,
yes,
doesn't the eventual defeat of white supremacy require white people to allow it?
Absolutely. One of the things about white supremacy, the system of white supremacy, is that it is an extremely functional system. There has never been a system as functional as the system of white supremacy in recorded history. Some of our...
Like, when you say that, right?
Yes.
Like, so, that's a massive...
You know what I mean?
You really should have to do 15 podcasts. You really just can't say that.
Well, the thing is, I'm saying it based upon anything that you would
but
be
you
able to...
But you should give to your audience 15 sources that they could spend the next 15 years to check that question. That's a massive statement.
It is. There's a... You know what? When I was developing the show, and I had felt like I want to do about the system of white supremacy. I really want to do this, but I spent a year and a half
right.
by my and even with Facebook, because I would you see a lot of the questions are based upon a lot of Facebook interactions that I had. So I actually like applied them, and then people would poke holes at them,
So
then I need to change it and say it like this, and you know, the statement that I'm saying. If you really look at it, take your feelings. And I think that's the most important thing. When I say that the system of white supremacy is extremely functional, there has never been a system that has been able to produce what it has been able to produce. It gets a lot of things done. There has never been a system as functional as this system.
But when you say that, again, I have to say, you have to give, this is my challenge to, because I observe you on Facebook, we have these conversations, right?
Yes.
I think because one of the things that is
when I'm saying functional, when I'm saying functional, I didn't say efficient. There's a difference, and each word that I'm using is.
But wait
very,
a minute, let me finish.
Okay.
Is that there should be some, like, what is the source or and it could be because you had a dream that told you this. I'm not suggesting every source that's written, right?
But from my observation
of what. Of all the world's history of systems.
Yes.
And systems you name them? Just,
okay. There's been tribalism. There's been royalism. Before.
Like, let's look at Kemet, which I know you're a part of the Osiris Society. Okay. Yeah?
Okay. There we go. Put me out there.
No, we got to have a frank conversation.
Yes.
You can't be
Some people awesome. Sitting there like, I never heard Austin being having it now. Yes, I am an initiate and a participant of Osiris Society. I was exposed to the community when I was like 16 or 17 and been an expressive, like, devout follower. When I turned about 30, 31.
31, okay.
Yeah, 31. And I say this because, so I've been exposed to the society for like over 15
years. And I say this because, we should say who the Osiris Society is.
The Osiris Society is an African community based upon the spiritual practices from ancient Africa, specifically Kemet.
And Indus Valley.
The Indus Kush
like
Valley, ancient,
right,
ancient India, ancient China, and this system has used these principles and practices of spiritual cultivation, using the imagery of ancient Africa, Northeast Africa.
Yeah.
So specifically.
And I say this because in order to have this conversation with you, which you're really pushing, I have to be frank. You can't have a person being frank, right?
Training.
That's the thing, right?
Training.
Okay. So the reason I ask that is because I want to know your thinking about to come to this conclusion. So I definitely recommend to people Medu Neter, volumes 1 through 7. Yeah, exactly.
1 through 7 by Raul Nefron.
And Men, right?
Right.
And shout out to Brother Minikek. Both of us here a lot.
Yeah.
In Pittsburgh. And so the reason I ask that is because that system in the Sarasat site is described as the most powerful system.
Indeed.
Right? And explaining it as going back millennia.
True
right?
Indeed.
And so my question about white supremacy, which is, I was just thinking so that like a little while ago, I was looking at someone writing about Kemet, and it was 2600 BC, right? Mm-hmm. And then and then they're talking about the advent of Greece, and they're going like around 700 BC.
True, right? Like 7, 8,
And I'm going like, before they started to quote them, before they wanted to cite them. And Herodotus is like 500 BC,
500,
right?
That's right.
Yeah, not they weren't in existence, but before they start becoming mentionable.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So the thing that I guess I was thinking was, God dog, man. Like, we act like 2600 to 500 is like 26 to 5. But it's really the same distance between now and zero.
True.
Right? So, and then it goes back, some people will say, at least 4,000 if you go to just what they give you in just general, and others will go back further, right? And I think Ron Nefferman goes much further back, right?
Yeah. To almost up to 10,000 to 40,000.
Exactly. Like a long time back, right?
Right.
And we put human beings at millions anyway. So it's like, it's a long time, I think. But we got thousands of years. Then we have, again, I think it's important for us to say, remember, white people start, they start at best 1400s. Right. So my question is,
why
do we not say the jury is still out when they don't yet have 2 millennia? Right? If we take the climate change folks to know what they're saying, and it runs it into the entire planet, and they have to go to Mars in the next 200 years, and we just go, of course, God continues and creates new life and whatever, but this particular species just goes away, which people will say is possible, right?
True.
People will say it's possible. It gets an 800-year run.
Okay.
And if you look at the world systems as they go down, is it their first ballot Hall of Famer from a systems perspective?
I got you. The question is, where's the context of African culture and African histories and their accomplishments?
And systems. And systems. And length of time.
And length of time within the context of white supremacy.
Yeah.
And how does
not
that...
Not in the context, but in the context of world history.
World history. Where's the context? Okay. It is reflective of, and is speaking of, experience, and is of... How do I say this? What was done in ancient Kemet, in reflection of the spiritual system that I practice, there were things that were practiced and done that ultimately brought us to where we're at, right? And even in the Medu Neter, it teaches that the cultivation of man and becoming a divine being was something that was practiced throughout the kingdom. So it wasn't just that in the spiritual practices that I study and that I practice, as in when Christianity speaks of only one perfect human being
right.
Jesus.
Yeah.
And ancient Kemet taught that there were thousands of people
who were
able to be Christ and be able to be a Christ on the planet. And their burials and things that they showed, because there was a spiritual cultivation system that was based upon an initiation and practice that was equal to their feats that they were able to accomplish. That's why the idea and understanding of masonry had a spiritual practice. Your ability to take a grain of sand and turn it into a 200 metric ton block is equal to for you to take a regular man and to develop him into a divine being on planet. The processes and the practices and the exercises and the whole process is equal to stone building, is equal to spiritual man building.
Yeah.
in the midst of that, there was something that did happen to where there was a, for lack of a better word, dilapidation. Mm-hmm. There was a spiraling down. Mm-hmm. Now, in the practice, it teaches you about cycles. So they teach you about that which has a beginning has an end, and that which does not have a beginning has no end. When it comes to the system of white supremacy, it is not as etheric, and racism is not as etheric. It's actually, believe it or not, it has, from my perspective and from what I've suggested, there is a beginning. And because there is a beginning, there is an end. And so that is something that I do express. When you start thinking that racism has been here and it has no beginning, you're ultimately saying that it has no end.
Right.
And I've never been a proponent for that. I actually give an actual date of August 20th, 1619, Jamestown, Virginia. To me, that's what I believe from my observation that the birthplace, the birth date of white supremacy is August 20th, 1619, Jamestown, Virginia.
Okay.
To speak about white supremacy as it relates to a system of global implications, see, Alexander the Great is not a global, his conquests are not a global implication. Because when Alexander the Great did what he did, what were the people in Japan? Were the people in Japan affected by Alexander the Great? No. When Napoleon, or Genghis Khan, when he was doing what he was doing, did that affect the people in the Mayans that were, or the Aztecs that were there during that time? Did they even know a Genghis Khan existed? No. So when I talk about white supremacy, I talk about from a global aspect. And if you follow the prerequisites that would constitute a global, then you, for me, you would take it to an actual place of where it started. Now, when it's ancient Kemet and the things that they're operating as it relates to the system, there's reflections of that culture around the planet, but the effectiveness of getting things done. You know what, some of our greatest technological advancements that we've seen has happened under the system of white supremacy, specifically communication and access of information. Even during the time of ancient Kemet, not everyone could read. And there was two languages. The hieroglyphs itself wasn't like everybody practiced that. So as it relates to now, our ability to communicate, our ability to have access of information has never been paralleled in any system in existence of record, and specifically I said in recorded history. There may have been a system that is better than, much more functional than white supremacy, and I'm saying that it might not have been recorded. So when I say, and every word that I use very specifically is very specific, I said that the system of white supremacy is an extremely functional system. There has never been a system as functional as the system of white supremacy in recorded history. In ancient Kemet, we learn, even in about around Nefer Amen, we learn in Sarasset, that there is history that is not recorded.
Sure.
And then, so I can only speak about what is recorded.
Oh, sure.
Could there be a system that is much more functional, much more global implication that has not been recorded? Yes, there's a chance. So, but specifically as it relates to what has been recorded.
Right.
Now this is the piece that I have to really add to that because of the rest of it. Even though that is extremely functional, it is not perfect. And I think that when I say extremely functional and perfect, I think sometimes some people misconstrued that.
Mm-hmm.
I did not say it was perfect, and it's not perfect. It is flawed. And because it is flawed, it is not perfect, but it's extremely functional. One of the pieces that makes it extremely flawed is the price. Just as much as it is functional to develop technology for us to have the iPhone, millions of lives have had to die for that cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
It is the cost that is the problem. That is the issue with the system of white supremacy, is that it mistreats people and it subjugates people who are not classified as white. And all the things that have developed for it to be functional comes at a price of human life. Now, you want to know why I say it is the most powerful, the most functional? Because there's never been a system that has cost so much human life. Even in the system of ancient Kemet, their system did not cost so much human life. To build the pyramid did not require thousands of lives to die.
Well, I mean, so...
See what I'm saying? So in that aspect, the reason why it is the most functional, because it is actually placed itself to where it has cost the most human life. There has been no system in recorded history that has cost more human life than the system of white supremacy.
This I would agree with you, but I guess the part that I would... This is, I'm kind of like trying to work this through, is that there's a conjoining here, I think, of scale and functionality. So you're saying that, so because it's, that Genghis Khan wasn't in Albuquerque, therefore it's not as functional, right?
It's not as global.
Well, no, you said, where we started with was, it's been in a more functional system.
Functional, meaning ability to get things done, like, immediately.
Yeah.
Yes.
But you have to judge a thing by the criteria that the thing itself has. Do you follow me? Like, for example, we're sitting here, you walk out the room, and you leave, you close the door, right? And I say, I judge you and say, well, you know, he did not, let's say, touch all four corners of every table as he left. So he left in a very erratic way.
You're absolutely right.
And you're like, I never had the intention to touch all four corners of every table before I left. So that you're judging by some criteria I didn't even want. So
Can we continue? Because I want you to finish that thought.
Let's just finish that.
Right. I have something for that. Yeah.
So the thing I guess I want to say is, I'm not sure other systems have had imperial intentions.
Mm.
Right? So to say a system is functional, it should be, I think, judged against what does the system want to do? And then we look at the two systems, 3, 4, 5, and we judge them by which one did what it wanted to do. Hmm. Not by what you're doing is you're taking the system of white supremacy and you're applying its criteria to every other criteria, to every other system, which would be white supremacy perfectly, because it would be taking white people's ideas, concepts, beliefs, and practices and applying them as the standard.
As it relates to white supremacy, it is not of analogous of its own. There are many practices and systems that were in operation that created the condition to help white supremacy to come through.
Sure.
So I'm not excluding other systems.
But you're judging them by the criteria that white supremacy has, which
right.
is scale.
The scale is important. The scale is important because the scale speaks to constructive and non-constructive, perspectively. Meaning, the example, there is a way for me to walk out of this room constructively, and then there's a way for me to walk out of this room non-constructively. Would it be constructive for me to walk out of this room and touch all four corners of the room? Or would it be constructive for me just to walk straight out?
Again, it depends on your criteria. Listen.
So based upon constructive and non-constructive, So what I'm expressing as it relates to...
I'm shaking my head, y'all.
Yeah. What I'm saying is the system of white supremacy constructive? No. I didn't say it was constructive. I said it was functional.
The most functional. All I'm trying to suggest
The most
you're
functional.
You're using the criteria it itself has.
Right.
Which is scale.
Scale.
Murder. Control.
Okay.
Right? And then you're applying that criteria to other criterias, and then you're creating a hierarchy, which is another white supremacy idea.
Okay.
As opposed to just saying, it is the pervasive system of today, right?
Okay.
It is not the most functional system, because it would be, to think that, would be to apply the criteria
of today.
Of this system, no, of this particular system, to other systems that did not have that as their intention. So you can't judge those systems by the criteria of white supremacy.
I agree.
That would be a white supremacist practice.
I would agree that those intentions were not proper.
No one wanted to do that.
No, and because of that.
No one wanted to touch all four tables. So no one tried. Had you wanted to, you could have.
But they were perception. Genghis Khan, Alexander the Great, had thought that they were touching all four. And in reality, I am scaling the world. I am traveling the world.
But I want to go back to the one that we started with, which was Kemet.
Kemet.
And African people. Yeah.
So you know, I saw the conversations were coming.
So do I think it's no? I don't. I don't think it's the same as childhood. I think, and this is what I mean. I think with some of the logics of this.
Okay.
There is good thinking here, but there is also a rhetorical arguments being made, right, to win a case. So do I think that you might, if I were in court, do I think I could get walked out of here in cuffs? Absolutely. It's a danger, it's an effective rhetoric. Do I think that means it's truth? I don't. I don't think effective rhetoric and truth are necessarily the same.
Wow.
I think that there are, you are making big points that have real things to think about. I don't think that taking a 20-year-old person and taking a 7-year-old child and then molesting them and destroying their whole life in ways that will be repeated and they will go into flashbacks and so on and so forth, right? But you see this child molestation, yes?
That's exactly what is happening.
No. Let me finish.
Go ahead. What
I've understood of people who have gone through this experience,
mm-hmm.
and I have not known much about it,
right.
It's an experience that is immediately jarring, and it lives with them for a very long time. This has not been my experience.
This is what I'm letting you know.
No, you asked me.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm the unit of measure,
yeah,
right?
We're using the unit of measure.
So let me finish.
Yeah,
so we can't now go back.
No, I'm not.
You got to stay with me.
Okay,
I'm the client.
I'm going to stay with you.
I'm here with the doctor, right?
Okay.
And you were discussing this with me, right?
Okay. All
right. Okay. So I'm telling you, Doc, I've had no flashbacks, these experiences, right? I've had no, but here's the thing I think is important. This is why I never jump on these posts. Because one of my little rules is, I don't get into arguments defending white people.
There we go.
I don't do it. So to this point here, all I will say is, this is not my experience, but I have no argument with you making the case. And I'm not gonna waste any time defending
white
people.
There we go. I like that. I'm not into defending white people either. But to your point, that comparing it to a child, everything around you is of a child at that time. You do not have control over a situation that was very potential that could have happened had those white women said something about that sexual encounter. The mere fact that you were able to engage in a sexual activity, and that when you got done, she didn't say anything. She didn't cry rape. She didn't say you whistled at her. You see where I'm going? That because that didn't happen, at that point in time, brother, she was in a position of power. And because of that, I asked you, were you being taken advantage of and you just not be aware of it? Because the very real implication of a non-white person engaging in any sexual activity and or sexual play with a white person while white supremacy in existence is absolutely dangerous. Now, I'm not saying that we should not, let me be more specific. I'm not trying to monitor people's or monitor your sexual, your bedroom or who you're going to sleep with.
Thanks.
What I'm asking and what I'm expressing is that there are some real implications that are already in play, so that when the sexual activity comes, I also know that there is something that is much more important between that interaction. Let me explain. If you, all the questions we ask, I'm asking, do you understand about white supremacy? Is white supremacy here true? Then do you have white friends? You do have white friends. So if there's anything in your life that you haven't gotten, it's going to come from, do you have a white person to call to? Yes, you do have a white person to call to. Okay, so then you understand what that means to have everything. All right. So when you do wind up interacting with a white person and it happens to be a girl and there's going to be some sexual activity, do you think that her giving you sex or you having some sexual encounter would be a constructive thing? If I meet a white person and I know that and her dad is the president of such and such, or uncle is the CEO of such and such, and I'm sitting there in this interaction, do you think me getting my dick sucked by her, me her giving me sex, would really help me right now?
Yeah.
No, not at all. That's not the constructive interaction. I really need something. At that point in time, those women that you were interacting with, I know, and I don't even have to know, but I know that you were in a certain space in your life that white woman may have had a relationship, could have put you on something that could have changed your circumstances. But because some sex was involved, that's what was given in exchange. I'm saying, if I come across a white woman and there's a point in time to where there's some sexual activity that happened, I know for a fact, because racism is in existence and she knows that she is white, it would be much more constructive for her and me to connect me to get at least a better job, for me to at least get some extra money.
Sure,
giving me sex or her giving or sucking my dick or something or me trying to smut a white girl. Like, that's not constructive to what's going on right now.
Sure.
So that's what I'm speaking about.
Yeah.
As it relates to the child molestation piece,
yeah,
we are in a condition of children. If we really look at it, because you know what's the other piece? What do you call a person when everything is provided for them?
Yeah, no.
See, a child.
Did you
see what I'm saying? So we are in a child state. We're in a child state.
Okay, I hear you. But the point I think you make about exploitation, this is why I say this is where I think that there's a rhetorical piece to this that I think, you know, is for rhetoric, right? It's to make a splash. I don't think it's child abuse, but can you make the case that it's exploitative? I could see that. I could see the same way I could see, but I'm going to go back and say that's probably the case with a lot of sexual relationships. And I'm going to say,
indeed,
particularly, and I'm going to go with, I think it's important in this one here to also talk about how we generally have sex with women, generally.
To begin with.
It's indeed. With exploitation.
Indeed.
And I think, so the reason why I say this, so I think that absolutely, if you step back, and I'm going to go back again to Medinater, mm-hmm. and say like reptilian brains and so on and so forth. So I think what's also more important for me to consider, because I'm not really in a place where I'm likely to have sex with white women right now anymore in my life. It's probably not going to be a thing. But I do think the issue of exploitation matters. And I think the relationship often that I have with women and whether or not that would be, could you offer someone to a woman's life? Most of the time, sex is probably the least thing somebody needs, right?
I agree.
So, especially with
other non-white people. Now, the other piece is sexual interaction with another non-white person under the system of white supremacy, right?
This is what I'm saying. I think that the part where the rhetoric can go too far is where we end up thinking it's useful to think about white people and white supremacy way more than we do. It's uncomfortable for us to think about.
It's embarrassing.
What's that?
To do it.
Yeah.
Not only is it uncomfortable, it's very embarrassing.
Okay. But I also think that for me, the part where I think it can become distracting is when it comes to like, the things that we're doing for each other on a day-to-day basis, and I don't agree with the point that everything, this is the point, everything that we do, there's a capacity for multiple systems to exist at once. I don't think I get your idea of the meta-macro system and that all systems are then, you know, underneath that or whatever. I don't know that I agree with that, right? Okay. And so I don't know that, I agree, you said in the beginning, the system of white supremacy exists. No question about it. Do I think it's the only system that exists at all at any other time? That's usually the thing. That's why every single thing, all like you'll say, any problem that you have in a relationship goes back to white supremacy.
It does.
So this will be your contention.
Yes, right? Indeed.
Yes. I think that the part that I agree with your point, and that I'll also say I think is in general relationships with women that I feel like is important for me to think about, is the thing about exploiting where you see somebody as a man. I see him like, oh, I could have sex with you, therefore. But I'm gonna say that, take it one step further though, and say, I think in that process we short ourselves, which is what you said earlier about white people. So which I, maybe this will be something, the thing that people, white people could see. Same thing I'll say for me as a man in this whole discussion. Eventually that exploitation shorts the person who's doing it.
Absolutely.
Which is why I don't think that you need white people to get rid of white supremacy.
I see.
Or you could argue, well, they'll get rid of it because it will short itself out. Mm-hmm. Because it's not a regenerative process, right?
You know what? One thing, it's in the stage of refinement, but also it also holds its own seeds of destruction.
Right.
Yeah, and
it
I think that's
exactly.
Yes. I don't think I really expressed that. I thought I do, but I have.
So we'll
to
have to have this in the next. We'll have to.
Yeah, I have to be specific. The system of white supremacy has within itself its own seeds of destruction.
Yeah,
and part of its own seeds of destruction is reflective of the flaws and the loopholes that are able to be exploited and seen by people who are non-white and white. So because of that, do we get to a point to where we sit on the sideline and wait it? There are certain things that are happening that I definitely suggest to stay out of, take notes and watch, you know what I mean? And little things, like one thing I always express, I never get in the way of white people arguing and talking.
That, right?
Yeah, like exactly. If they're arguing and fighting, I let them fight and argue, and I just take notes. And I let I do not get in the way of white people fighting with other white people.
But here's where I think in the ongoing dialogue. This is why I would want to do this and not Facebook, because it would take too long.
Yeah,
and it's too complex.
It is.
But the thing I guess I would say though, for me, goes back to something you said at the beginning or earlier, which is when you were judging all systems by what I said is the standard of white supremacy, right? Is that even I think the idea, even the dialogue, right? Where you have a point that you want to get across. There's a series of, like, Simmel called the Socratic method, right? I'm going to take you through a series of things and we're going to lead you to the conclusion. This would be, and I think it's actually it's apropos that you use that model. And yet, my point about using the standard of white supremacy to judge other systems. Because the Socratic model of getting to a way, to an answer would be, Aristotle is like really important in white supremacy. Because he justifies slavery and he has a whole lot of ideas that we should spend some time, I think, paying attention to. Seeing as how he's considered like the great, you know, the great wisdom, right? By so many things. So I think the fact that when you're using the Socratic method for what I think, go back to the original thing about what I said is a survival mechanism, right? So in masculinity. So for me, the Socratic method, masculinity, white supremacy, all these things are very intertwined.
I learned from white people.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
So I deny that.
Yes, yes.
Right.
So I think though that we, this is what I mean about saying other systems, that I think that particularly as black men or non-white men, we'll even say.
Particularly black.
That Africa and African culture is a lot for us to learn about masculinity in its more
fluid,
twisty, turny ways that might allow us to have conversations that often are about one or the other, right? Either your way or my way, which I would say when, here's my question back to you, when it's my way or your way and we both are committed to our ways, what's likely to happen?
For it to be an African conversation?
No. But let's go back to this.
Okay.
My way or your way,
right.
and we're both committed to our position.
Right.
What's likely to happen
conflict.
Between men?
Conflict.
But no, be more specific.
Confrontation.
And then?
Conflict.
And then?
Destruction.
I would say violence.
Like violence,
I
think destruction,
that's
violence.
Where, right. That is right. Where I feel like we, this whole issue, to your point about white supremacy in the world that we're in, and my original thing about what keeps me so survival, I do think talking about the conceptions of masculinity that in white supremacy, which is why, particularly for us as men, and surviving in a system, why unlearning that particular way is an important part of the survival. Because that's when you are likely to confront like this and you don't have power, you're likely to use all kinds of violence or whatever. So I just wanted to add that to it. And why I don't think we should just talk about white supremacy, one last example that I think we can take from Africa in this. So the notion that I understand in my childish way that God is too complex to talk about only as God. We have to talk about ancestors and Orisha and for all these, to try to get our minds around something that is too grand. Which is why I don't think it's useless to talk about capitalism or homophobia or masculinity or hyper-da-da, because there are some major things that there's enough things happening that are worth paying attention to and naming and understanding that allow you to creep towards some understanding and sometimes glossing over, and I'm saying this is the notion of using why I think the model has a relationship, in just saying God, we can gloss over some things. I'm not a priest, I'm just offering my little understandings of something.
Yeah.
That I think the same thing can happen with white supremacy, that we can gloss over a bunch of other things that are useful for us to pay attention to and discuss.
Is there anything that, as relates to problems or issues, that does not
relate to white supremacy?
That does not trace back to racism, white supremacy?
See, this is the
that's
your
that's
question.
Yeah.
And this is why I don't know. I don't know the
answer to that question. But if you would think of one and then try to work your way back to it.
Let me tell you what that, I don't know. Let me say that first. I don't know, which I think, again, we have a hard time with that.
Accepting that.
We don't know. We have masculinity.
I think that's one, when I said that question, nobody answered. No, there was one lady that wrote one thing, and then I answered back, and then she just deleted
her thing. Yeah.
Yeah, she was like, you know what, you're right. So I was like, yo, why didn't anyone?
Because
was that a complicated question?
Well, no, it's because I think you have worked out a series of answers. If I were to work you through, let's say, down a certain road that you haven't walked down, I'm going to be able to say, like, watch out for that tree. Yeah. But you started in that hole, yeah, right? Because you've done the line of questioning,
I've
right?
I've worked on it.
And Neely Fuller we've got here, I'm looking at, for y'all listening to the podcast here, I'm thumbing through 400 pages on one.
Another.
Yeah. So there's a sequence to all of these questions that Austin is going through, which I appreciate. But I want to try to answer the little bit I've thought about this thing. Somewhere in this is Greece and the patriarch and patria and nationhood as a concept. That's a part of our problem. And again, I'm going to say masculinity is in there. Somewhere in there is all God as man is somewhere in there. Somewhere in there is the notion of like white skin as like this higher order thing is in there. Somewhere in there is like Anglo-Saxons and a lot of values and cultures of the people that we named it before around violence and power and da-da-da. So I think all of these things are related. I think that white supremacy is probably as a child of some earlier concepts that have
manifested into it.
Capitalism is one of them. It's later. So I think that we are, and I go again to go back to Black Marxism and Robinson, I think he's trying to get us to go back earlier. I think Chekhov and Diop was trying to get us to go back earlier. I think white supremacy is important as a part of the thing. And I think that there are people who are doing some... So my answer to your question is, well, I don't know. But I don't think that answer is satisfying to me. That is, I feel like there are some other pieces that are culture that are important in all of this. Mm. Now, we know what you think.
I'll say this. I have not come across an issue or problem when I take some time to it and I ask a lot of questions to it. I write it down. I go through it.
Yeah.
And I try my best not to have it go. I even try to have racism not show up in somehow, some way. So I'm not saying that there is one. I'm just saying I haven't come across a problem that we face as it relates to human beings on the planet Earth that does not trace back to racism.
See, I'll put next to that, I can't see one that doesn't include it. I wouldn't say, I'm not certain I'm going to do them all tracing back to it. But I
not
see
tracing
one.
Back to as it relates to the impetus or the inception. Because there are a lot of issues and problems that do predate the system of white supremacy. Yes.
Because you usually say source. You say trace it back to. If you said include it, I'd be all on board with you. Absolutely. Every single one.
Right. So trace it back to where, because if we don't solve the race problem, our inability to solve those other problems won't happen. So if we leave the race problem there, when we go to deal with sexism,
you won't be able to do it because you haven't dealt with the race problem.
So what I'm saying, Trace, they're interrelated.
I would say this too, bro, if I could.
Yeah.
And then you gotta give me the last question. But I think they're related. I think and the one I've been thinking about more lately is the masculine one that I started with. So I do think that there is the race
problem.
Masculinity thing are intertwined with each other. I think they're intertwined.
I do.
Because I think European, before there was Europe, I think it's important to remember, Europe is created late in the game in human civilization. It's
That's
recent.
Right.
It's a thousand years old.
They're the last ones to show
No, but I mean, even in the context of what we call, before we had Europe, we had, like you said, Visigoths, we had Greek Greeks, we had other kinds of things, right? Again, I don't know the answer to these questions. I'm just saying, I don't think that it's only race, but I do think there's no case where you can excerpt race from it. Absolutely. There's no, even in my current chat, I can always see, even when I say how we treat black women, like it's black women, right?
How about this? in relationships that you had in your relationship at being married.
Yeah.
Is there any of those issues that you had in the marriage that cannot be traced back?
Again, let's not say trace back. Absolutely. Yes. But I also want to say, too, as someone who is of white and black descent, I have my own relationship to this. Mm. Right? I think it's important.
It's not an analogous.
The white people have racialized me just to be just black, right? But ethnically and culturally, I have different inheritances. I'm going to bring a different view that is influenced by European people in a different way to the situation. So of course it influences me.
Wow.
But I'm speaking just for me. So you gotta give me the piece question.
Okay. The final question is, what are some solutions or some things that can be done to help eliminate the system of white supremacy and replace it with a system of justice? What are some solutions or solutions that you have? What do you think?
I mean, one thing we do, I work on a project called the Transformative Arts Process that's supported by the Heinz Endowments and I work with a sister named Sister Aisha, and we have a group that's been trying to think through a bunch of issues like this. Mm. One of the things that we found is displacing whiteness in European culture through practicing African culture displaces European culture, displaces whiteness. That whiteness is core contention, is that African people, particularly African, that's why I think it's important also not to use non-white, because Caucasoid was set up opposite to Negroid. So it's not just Caucasoids and everybody else, as some, I disagree with that. It's Caucasoids as the A and Negroids as the D. Caucasoids is one, Negroids is four. Australoids and Mongoloids were in the middle of the two, but Negroids are the only one without land mass, as you know, right? So whiteness does not exist without blackness, and vice versa. They need each other to exist.
It's because they used to be comparative.
They're used to be comparative. So a core way of replacing European supremacy is practicing African culture visibly, publicly, in public spaces, and using it to help answer public problems and questions, which is why I say earlier that we don't want to use the standards of white supremacy to judge it. Because that's what makes us say things like, you know, respect white people for what they do in a certain kind of way, because we use the standard of like, you know, now let's play big bank, take little bank. You know what I mean? And other kinds of, you remember that?
I see what you're saying.
Right? Yeah. When we use that rationale.
Excuse me, brother.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, man, we got to close.
Oh, we're about to close, right? Yep.
Yeah,
are you going to tell him some white supremacy is making him close this down?
Okay, here we go. All right.
Okay, so the last thing I'll say on this is that if we use that standard, right, I think that's because deeply we actually respect white Europeanists and we fear it, and then we use their standards, and we shouldn't use their standard to judge it. We should use, I think, African standards or other cultural standards to assess it, which will minimize how we see it. Mm. And so we should not say these things like it's the most functional, da, da, da. We should be very critical of it, and we should look at it from the perspective of the cultures that we want to aspire to. We can't get rid of it if we use its assessments of itself, because we will admire it, and we will use things like a whole bunch of European processes and methods, da, 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 da,
part of the solution, I agree. You cannot use the tactics of the oppressor to use as the answer of the oppression. I also know that the oppressor has not equipped us to properly define or speak about our oppression either. So I'm in an agreement that what needs to be used equally is not what has been done by African people and not what has been done by white people, but something that is beyond, because not everything was right. So I'm not trying to do, and this is hard for me to say this, but I'm not trying to do what was done.
Sure.
Because it wasn't all the way right even during Kemet. I'm going to be 100% honest with you.
Sure, sure.
So, and I'm not trying to do what's going on in white supremacy. I want to do something because I learned what was done and what not done during Kemet, and because I see what is being done and not, and what is being done and during white supremacy, so that the future is something that is not reflective of anything that has been.
Sure.
Because anything that has been will create the problem to come back later.
Okay, brother, I hear you.
You know what I'm saying? Brother Justin.
All right. Appreciate
it. Obsolete and Dangerous, a podcast where the dangerous part is not the people, it's the conversation.
Absolutely.